What difference does Micah Parsons' trade request make to betting lines? You'll be wildly interested to hear that. Plus, what quarterbacks actually impact the way Vegas perceives their favorite football team? And we're going to take a look at early odds from all the way to week one to the Super Bowl. It's time for a betting preview episode of Inside Coverage right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage. It's the how and why behind all things going on in the NFL. And boy, is this is the perfect degenerate episode. Like, I'm Jason Fitz. I'm hanging out with Frank Schwab as always. And Frank and I get a special guest. We get an extra person coming in with us now. Ben Fox joining us. And we, Frank, I can't believe they're letting us do this. We get to talk about betting. We're going to get into so many fun betting stuff. Frank and I are degenerates, Ben. That's the real takeaway here. Frank and I, there's a reason they don't let us go to Vegas together. There's a reason, like, shot and a drink is a tradition for Frank and I. And now all of a sudden, Frank, like, my level of excitement on this from 1 to 10 is like a 3,000.
Proof that the bosses should never let us plan anything, because we're like, we're going to get Ben on. We're just going to talk betting for an hour. Like, why not? Let's just, you know, let's just go full degenerate. This is what happens when the teacher's gone. The substitute can come in and we could just throw spitballs all over the room and just talk about lines and odds. And oh, man, I'm excited. If you're 3,000, I might be 3,001 on the excitement.
It's a safe space. Like, it's a safe space. You know, degenerate's a strong word. We're going to educate here. We'll educate.
But it's, in me and Fitz's case, apt. It is. It's accurate. Yeah. It fits.
Fits. See what he did there? Okay, so Fits, for all of you, if you're listening to this, you're like, I'm not a betting guy. I promise you that this is going to be betting around just good football conversation. So,
absolutely.
You know, just understand that our goal here is to give you some betting information and also have some smart football talk. So let's get into some of the latest betting news, because we can't talk about football contractually this week without talking about Micah Parsons. I feel like that's just part of our job, right? So Micah Parsons has demanded a trade from the Dallas Cowboys, which I just speak for the whole room when I say he's still going to be a Dallas Cowboy. Like, let's start there. Frank Schwab, do you believe week one Micah Parsons is a Dallas Cowboy?
Yes, but I don't know if he's going to be playing. Let's put it that way. I don't think the Cowboys are trading Micah Parsons. I mean, that it's just not going to happen. Jerry always gets the deal done, right? But the way he's talking about this, it's almost like he's enjoying it. It really is. I think it's almost weird how he's like reveling in the negotiation here and this kind of game of chicken they're all playing. He even referenced Emmitt Smith back in 1993. And if we remember, one of the most famous holdouts of all time, because Emmitt Smith missed two games. Cowboys went 0-2. I could see Micah missing that game. At least one game. We saw Chris Jones miss a game. I believe it was two seasons ago, the opener against Detroit. I could see a similar path there. And I don't think Micah's going anywhere. I think the fantasies of him being traded, we're a long, long way from that. But week one, I don't know. I can't sit here and say 100%. I think he's for sure going to be on the field for Cowboys.
Okay, so Ben, from your mindset, before we even get to what it means, because there is an interesting betting odds thing here, do you believe that Micah Parsons will be a Cowboy this year?
Yes. I think Frank laid out a good solution. Again, I know we want to have contrasting opinions here at some point. I think, listen, this is why you draft and develop players, right? And the Cowboys, for as bad as they have been getting some of these contracts done earlier and having to overpay players, they have drafted them well, right? Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, these are cornerstone players. The issue hasn't necessarily been their performance on the field. It's been that second contract or down the line, third contract. So he's going to be there. I think, like Frank said, there's a question, I believe, of when it gets done. And he should be the highest paid player. I do think Jerry Jones always kind of likes to be in the media as well, right? And so it's almost like...
Really?
People have been discussing this. Like, does he just enjoy this? It's getting done in a month. You know, people are talking about the Cowboys. It would be very difficult to believe he's not on that team week one. And honestly, a massive, massive loss for a Cowboys defense that wasn't good with him on the field. Imagine if you didn't have him on the field for this season. Obviously, Dak coming back and what should be a much improved offense as well.
So stick there for a second.
Do you mind if I jump in? Let me jump in, Fitz, because I just want to get straight to our degeneracy here. I'm surprised the line hasn't moved, actually. The line has been, for week one, Eagles -7. That's been pretty steady since the lines were released. There were a few -6.5s that first few days. It's basically been held steady at -7. You go to BetMGM right now, still Eagles 7-point favorites over the Cowboys. First of all, do you think that there's any chance that line does move towards Philadelphia? And how much do you think Micah Parsons is worth the line? If we just said today, hey, Micah Parsons is out week one for whatever reason, Jerry just says he's not going to play week one, what would the line look? I think it would have to move at least to 9. Like, I think Micah's worth at least 2 points of the line.
Yeah, I think so. 9 would be high, I would say. Only because it's difficult for defensive players to move the line that much. True. Right. So a lot of what you're looking for is kind of what is that guy's value above replacement, right? It's not just Micah Parsons in a vacuum. It's how much better is he? And for a defense, right, how much do they miss not having him? Like if it's a TJ Watt, the Steelers are obviously not as good a defense. They still have a really good defense outside of just TJ Watt. So there's a handful of defensive players. I'd probably say, let's say 5 to 10 who might move the line slightly. I did this exercise actually a couple years ago and asked odds makers, like we'll talk about a little later with my QB piece, the skill position players and defensive players who had moved the line. And Micah was among those. I think he was about 0.6, 0.7 in there. I checked in with a couple odds makers yesterday, and they were right around there, half a point, maybe a point at max. I think this would probably go to 7.5 if he was ruled out, and potentially, you know, maybe the total moves a little bit, right? Maybe moves up because the Cowboys, again, you're assuming a worse defense, Eagles better offense, that type of thing. But it also depends where the lines are, right? And so 7 is one of the most key numbers in the NFL. So they're always hesitant to move off of that. There, I think it's been 7.5 at a couple books, has been bought back to, it's basically 7, like you said, across the market. So I think it would go to 7.5. One odds maker told me maybe to 8. I don't think it would get that high as to 2 points. So I think it's about a half point, maybe a point at max for Micah's value against the spread.
I probably just overshot it because I've seen that defense without Micah Parsons. It's not good. And I just, I can imagine, I already think Philly's the right side here. And I could just see Philly just drubbing them without Micah Parsons, really. Like, I know I hate to say that about a fairly quality Cowboys team week one, right? But you get the defending Super Bowl champs, always get that boost. They're at home. They're a really, really good football team. If it does stay in that 7.5-8 range, I assume they're going to get flooded with Eagles money if Micah doesn't play in that game.
George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb might be a great combination. They haven't played with Dak Prescott for a snap, right? And the Eagles are basically a well-oiled machine. They lost some pieces on defense, certainly. A ton of good players. The offense is basically the same. You know they're going to be pumped week one. Like you said, it's one where you could see the Cowboys maybe like making it close in the second half, or it could just be a route, essentially, from Jump Street. Because when the Eagles were looking good in the playoffs and obviously the Super Bowl, they were just kind of a runaway locomotive. No one was even close to them.
Yeah, and it should be noted, you know, if you're listening and you barely gamble at all, which is great, we're gonna help you through this. We're going to make sure that you understand what we're talking about. Part of the reason they don't like to move off of a 7-point spread is just think about a football game and the way it plays out. Winning by a touchdown is a lot easier mathematically than winning by 8 points. So, you know, if you're the book and you're sitting here and you've got the Eagles as a 7-point favorite, you don't want to move that to 8 because that makes things a lot more complicated. So just oversimplification for anyone that's just listening and trying to figure out what it means for you. It means that the Eagles at a 7-point touchdown advantage feels really spicy to all of them. Like, we all feel good about Philly -7 in this game. Like, I do. Frank, you feel good about Philly -7 in this game?
Yeah, I do. I mentioned -6.5 coming out in the opening lines for a reason, because I might have jumped on that right away 4 months ago. I knew this was gonna. This was not going to move the Cowboys' way, like, unless Saquon Barkley got hurt or something in preseason. So, yeah, I think Philly's the right side here. I just, as much as I've kind of pushed back on the whole notion that we all thought all last year Philly was great, and Philly wasn't even favored in the Super Bowl when it kicked off last year. Nobody was picking Philly to win the Super Bowl last year. So we have a little bit of revisionist history of how we think about the Eagles and, oh my God, they're a dynasty now. Well, we didn't think that way when Super Bowl 59 kicked off, but now we've kind of come around to that. And I just think everything, Ben talked about this, the continuity with the Eagles is just so strong. They're going to come out week one, I think, play really, really well. Yes, I think the Eagles are the right side here.
Ben?
Yeah, it's usually not necessarily my place to say, hey, here's a bet I love. But I would tend to favor that Eagles side, especially like Frank said, getting that under a touchdown. I think that's going to be a smart play. And like the odds makers usually put out, right, putting that out at 6.5 to kind of see, hey, is this going to jump right up to 7? It's unlikely people, if you like the Cowboys, you're going to take that 6.5. You're going to wait until it's 7 and take the +7. So we kind of saw where that went. And in the same vein, I think there have been any 7.5s in the market. People have taken the Cowboys +7.5. So it's kind of the right line now. Week one is obviously really interesting because it's the one time in the season where the odds, you have months, right, where they're out. Usually the NFL season, it's really a week, 10 days that a lot of people are going to be seeing these odds. So these odds have been out for a while. They've kind of been hammered into shape. And outside of any other information, which for the most part is just, is Micah Parsons going to play? It seems like that's where the line in total probably will be.
Well, and this is my reminder. As I said in the beginning, this show is about the why and the how of all things NFL. Ben is about the why and the how of all things gambling and why these things are doing what they're doing. It's up to Frank and I to be like, woohoo! You know, we're the two Muppets here flailing our arms. We're the two old guys like sitting in the side of the theater commentating on the entire thing. So let's get to positions that you mentioned, you've written on this, that do change the needle, that do move the needle, I should say. And that's quarterbacks. And this is a really interesting conversation because something that is going to start from week one is health concerns. We're all going to talk about it. And why I found what you wrote, Ben, about odds makers ranking the 32 NFL quarterbacks by point spread value. There's value to everybody that's ever bet in this article because it reminds you a little bit of how powerful certain people are to what happens in Vegas. So, for example, when you talk about the top in the market that moved the needle, Josh Allen, we'll get to this in a second, is at the top of the list. What does that tell everybody listening? It tells you that if Josh Allen is out for some reason, there's a massive shift in what that means. So it's something for everybody to keep an eye on, Ben. And let's get there. Like, who is the quarterback that, you know, I mentioned Josh, I guess he's at the top of the list. Why? Why is Josh Allen the biggest market mover?
Yeah. So a couple things. I like doing this article for a couple reasons. One, I think everyone should get something out of it, right? So whether you're a fan of one team and you're just saying, hey, the Detroit Lions, how good is Hendon Hooker, right? How good is he as a backup? Is it basically the same as Jared Goff? What do odds makers think? And you kind of can see that difference between the article is basically measuring if it was Sunday morning, right, and all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes was out and then the backup was in, how much is the line moving? And again, there's a lot of nuance to this. How good is the team that the player is on? How good is the backup quarterback? How good is the defense, right? Coaching staff, all of these things factor in, as well as, like we talked about a little bit with the Eagles and Cowboys, where is the line, right? If it's a team -2, it could potentially move more than if it's, hey, -7, let's say. And they're right around a key number. So that's also going to factor in with the Bills. A lot of what odds makers said, just Josh Allen coming out, you know, a lot of potential questions about accuracy, obviously a very good athlete. Is he a really good quarterback? Just kind of cutting down on the turnovers from year to year. I think obviously not impressed with Mitchell Trubisky as a backup, understandably. And, you know, he had tied for Lamar Jackson. Whether, you know, who's the MVP, that's a discussion for last year. But he tied for the league's best QBR. He had 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Obviously, they didn't get to the promised land where they wanted to go. But basically, another odds maker had brought up, too, just his supporting cast, right? And so if you have, he brought up the Saints. He said, if you put the Saints skill position players on Buffalo, are they worse, right, than the Bills skill position players? And he brought that up as well with Kansas City. Everyone knows Kansas City's skill position players and Kelsey and the wide receivers. No one really knows the Bills, maybe James Cook. They haven't had that stand, you know, that star wideout outside of Diggs in the last few years. And so it was just kind of Josh Allen does it all. He's big. He's indestructible. He's really difficult to stop on third and fourth and shorts. And he's just right now the number one guy. Again, if it was just him and a league average backup, would he be above Mahomes? That kind of depends on the bookmaker. But with Mitchell Trubisky as the backup, and then with Mahomes having Gardner Minshew as the backup, he just edged out Mahomes.
I love this piece, Ben, by the way. And I think for anybody, it's very, very educational, even if you're not a bettor. Because I've always said the most honest sports analysts out there are odds makers. I could sit here and tell it like, or somebody on whatever channel or whatever outlet or whatever could say, I think Matthew Stafford's the best quarterback in football. Well, are you putting money down on that? Because these guys who make these decisions on how much Josh Allen versus his backup is to the point spread, there's millions of dollars on the line every NFL Sunday. They got to be right. Like these are, they're not just blowing smoke and clickbaiting and hot takes. They need to put their money where their mouth is here. So I think it's very informative to look at this. Two things stood out to me, Ben. I want to ask you about both of them. The biggest riser was Michael Penix, which really surprised me. A, because Kirk Cousins is still a reasonable backup, I think. Like the line change was him almost 5 points from what he was last year. I don't think Michael Penix proved that much to me. He played fairly well in his little cameo there. But I didn't go, oh, Michael Penix, said it and forget it. He's their star for the next 10 years. He might be, but I don't know if I'm there with him yet. I was surprised he was the biggest riser since last season. And also, the biggest faller being Aaron Rodgers. And you had some quotes in there that were very harsh. These odds makers saying basically, most of them anyway, not all of them, but most of them saying, kind of Aaron Rodgers is cooked. And I didn't see that last year. I keep citing this stat that over the last 10 games last year, Aaron Rodgers had 18 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. I get he wasn't MVP Aaron Rodgers, but I thought he was pretty good. Oddsmakers obviously don't. He was the biggest faller since the end of last season. So were you surprised by those two or any others in kind of the risers and fallers?
Yeah. And so one of the, I guess, difficult things with the exercise as well, right, is that there aren't as many apples to apples comparisons. And by that, I mean, year over year, like Jaden Daniels, who was the biggest riser. He was 28th last year. I believe he was 9th this year. And his backup both years was Marcus Mariota. So you could really tell, like last year, he was, let's see, 1.2 points above the spread ahead of Mariota. This season, he's 4.98, right? So just under 5 points. That's really the apples to apples comparison with Penix and Drake May. The two of those were partially because they went from a backup or projected backup to a starter. So Penix, he still is only the 30th ranked above replacement because he's only 1 point above the spread compared to Cousins. But last year, he was basically 4 points worse coming in. Partially, again, Kirk Cousins, good quarterback, hadn't yet gotten injured, hadn't yet thrown, 8 interceptions, I think, over the past 3 or 4 games down the stretch. And so Cousins downgraded a lot, Penix upgraded a lot, but still Cousins is one of, you would have to argue, the best backup quarterbacks in the league, right? So regardless of kind of what you think about Penix, his value against the spread is going to be depressed because Cousins is also such a good backup. Now, if Penix was, you know, had a backup like Josh Dobbs, let's say Brandon Allen, somebody else, that would be an even bigger number, bigger difference. But really, it was the fact that he went from a backup to a starter. I think that was the biggest one. Same thing with Drake May. He was a little worse than Jacoby Brissett last year. Now, again, he's still, I'd say odds makers had mixed opinions on May. A lot of it's kind of, you have to see it on the field. And that's the same thing with all three of those guys, right? The risers, second year quarterbacks. And odds makers, that's probably the most difficult thing they have rating is the rookie quarterbacks. Some odds makers, the rookie quarterback is a zero coming in the first week. There is no adjustment against the spread, and they're going to adjust based off of what they see. Others are going to have an opinion before the season and then obviously adjust in the first couple weeks. And with some of these guys, same thing with Drake May, a couple odds makers said, like, we expect the Patriots to be good. We just have to see it on the field first. And he could be, you know, 4.5 points better, let's say, than the backup by the end of the season, but we're not going to put that down for the start of the season. I would say Jaden Daniels was clearly the biggest riser. And again, that was the apples to apples starter comparison. In terms of Rodgers, yeah, you didn't have to tee up odds makers much, I would say, to say some negative things about him. There was probably the widest variance on him. I believe one odds maker had him 0.5 point above Mason Rudolph, and I think one had him 6.5 points above. So that's kind of why I asked 12 different odds makers, right? Is because everyone's going to have differing opinions. You don't want to talk to two or three people. You're not going to get kind of that number that it should be. And so that's why you talk to 12 people, you get the average, and it kind of ends up where it should be. But yeah, odds makers really didn't see a lot on the Jets. And obviously also they're banking on a lot of just the data. Tom Brady is the 40-year-old quarterback who played well. Otherwise, there's not a lot there, right? And so they're going to go on the long run, what we've seen, and we just haven't seen it from 40-year-old quarterbacks. One odds maker really said, like, Aaron Rodgers just didn't look like he wanted to get hit. A lot of checkdowns, throwing short. And you can argue whether or not you think the Steelers' offense is better than the Jets' offense last year, and the infrastructure, the defense, all that. Ultimately, it's still a 41-year-old quarterback playing, and that's a lot of what they saw too.
So I know we're going to get to some win totals in a second, but stick with this Drake May conversation for a minute, because Frank and I certainly were surprised when the schedule came out and all of a sudden everybody started talking about the fact that the Patriots were favored in double digit games. Like, why is everybody so enamored with the Patriots team that was so bad last year and hasn't done anything on the field yet to show that it's truly turned around?
Yeah, I mean, I think odds makers, they factor everything in, right? And one of the things is coaching. And I think the Patriots, you'd have to argue, have one of the biggest upgrades kind of in the coaching staff year over year. And so that certainly factors in. A lot of it also is schedule and Drake May, and assuming that he's going to take, you know, the first to second year leap. A lot of people who watched the film thought Drake May played really well last season. He just had nothing around him, right? No offensive line. That's why they draft Will Campbell at number four. No wide receivers. That's why they get Stephon Diggs and other help as well. So they've upgraded that. The defense as well should be good or potentially better. And a lot of these games, you know, it's not like the Patriots are favored by 7 points, right, in all these games. Mm. I think it's always important to take into note how much they're favored by, right, in some of these games. And if it's -1.5, -2, it's a relative toss-up. They're still favored, for sure, and expectations are higher. I think it was everyone was a little surprised when you saw the Patriots win total. That was one that stood out, right, at whether it was 7.5 or 8.5, depending on the book. Seems very high. I think last year theirs was 4.5. So it's a very high number, seemingly based off of what they had on the field last year. But you could also make a case they're the second best team in that division. And so then if all of a sudden you're beating the Dolphins and you're beating the Jets, maybe you go 3-1 in those games, as opposed to maybe 0-4 or 1-3 last season, whatever they were, more of those wins are going to pile up. And so I think it's a combination of all of those things that factor in. And people really were impressed with Drake May.
I think the one thing there that was most, that's most, I think, important to the Patriots conversation that you mentioned is the schedule. The schedule is the easiest in the NFL based on Warren Sharp, who we all read, a great football analyst. He takes the win totals and basically uses that for strength of schedule. And he had the Patriots by far the easiest schedule in the NFL. And then you add on the fact that they had such a good free agency period, a draft class everybody loved. They had the number one consensus grade. I'd still have sticker shock over 8.5 wins for the Patriots, but I get it. It's hard with that schedule to fade them because they're going to have some pretty easy wins, as you mentioned. I'm higher on the Jets than probably the consensus, and I don't think the Dolphins are that terrible, but overall, the Patriots, it's going to be hard for them not to at least be in the range of 8-9 wins just based on their schedule.
I'm hammering the under on that. I am hammering the under. I'll try
to talk you out of it, man.
Mike Vrabel, like, we're making Mike Vrabel sound like he parted the Red Sea and just dragged the worst Titans team you've ever seen in history to an AFC championship game. Like, we are popping Mike Vrabel up like he is just a golden god of coaching, and it's an immediate turnaround. And I don't know, like, yeah, they spent their money really well in the offseason, and they drafted well. Aren't those the same things we said about the Bears a year ago right now? And they sucked last year. So I hear it. I hear the easy schedule. I just always counter that for every Patriots fan that's looking at the schedule saying, oh, that's an easy win, the fan of the other team is looking at the schedule saying, oh, the Patriots, that's an easy win. I'm not willing to. I don't think you get out of the sea of suck as quickly as New England thinks that they're going to get out of the sea of suck. They're like a 6-win
says the Raiders fan. Says the Raiders fan.
Look, if anybody knows that it's quicksand and tougher to get out of, it's me. All right. We're going to get into a bunch of win totals, some popular bets that are out there. We'll do that after we take a quick break as we continue breaking down everything you need to know about betting this year in the NFL. Welcome back to Inside Coverage, the betting special. Ben Fox joining us. Win totals. Frank and I talk a lot about it. We love it. Give me something. You talked to all of these books. Was there a win total? Because we just talked about the Patriots. Was there a win total that you looked at and you're like, huh, I need to ask some people about that. That seems really off to me.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know necessarily about I guess I'll answer the off first and then some popular ones after that. I think the two that stood out initially when these came out, and again, having been doing this for years and years and years, getting some gray hairs, these are released earlier and earlier, right? So I forget if this was February or March that some of these were released or April, but these have been out for months. And I think the two that stood out, one we discussed was the Patriots, right? And just seeing that, whether that opened at 7.5, it's been pushed up to 8.5 at some books. And the 49ers, I think everyone saw coming off last season, and obviously not the season that they were hoping for. They've just been kind of a standard of excellence, and they just weren't a factor last year. Having a win total of 10.5 after going, I believe, 5-12 last season seemed like one that, wow, this really stood out. What is kind of the case for this? So I would say the 49ers were probably the one that stood out the most. And I think as Frank had talked about, a lot of that with the Patriots, same thing with the 49ers is the schedule too. And just, you know, the easiest schedule, I believe, by opposing season win totals. So like Warren Sharp has, meaning who they're playing, the Vegas win totals, if you add them all up, it's the lowest number in the NFL. And so the 49ers obviously getting some players back as well. But I think that's one where that stood out immediately. You said, whoa, 10.5, that seems kind of high.
All right, so let's go through some of the popular win totals that are out there and what everybody's betting on. Everybody seems to be, like, Frank and I have talked about this a million times, I'm not sure the Steelers are going to be any good, but I'm damn sure the Steelers are going to be relevant. That speaks in the way that everybody's playing it, right? They're popular.
Yeah, the Steelers is the one, and this is at BetMGM. This is at multiple other books. They are just, everyone wants to have an opinion on them, as one odds maker told me. They are the most bet over at a lot of books. There are a lot of tickets on the under as well. They're just a popular win total. And I think a lot of that happens, you know, for two factors, right? One, Aaron Rodgers. He's one of the more polarizing players we have in the league. And two, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. And so if we do some basic math and there's 17 games and you win 9 and you lose 8, well, that's over 8.5. And that's all you have to do to cash the win total. And so there isn't a lot of, you know, thought necessarily into that. I'm not saying the public bettors always have that simple of kind of a decision, but that's really one that stood out with the Steelers. And they actually had one guy I thought was interesting at a book in Vegas. He bet $10,000 on the Steelers over 8.5 at +118. They moved it. They moved the juice to -110. He bet $22,000 on over 8.5. They moved it again to -125. And he bet another $22,000 also on over 8.5. So that's $52,000 on the Steelers over 8.5. At one book from the same bettor. So a lot of faith, certainly, in the Steelers, but really just a lot of opinions, I think, on the Steelers. They're an interesting team as well. They're only favored by more than 3 points in 2 games this season. They're only favored in 6 games right now on the look-ahead lines as it is. And they're underdogs in 7 of their final 9 games, including at the Lions, at the Chargers, at the Ravens. So the schedule is definitely backloaded in terms of difficulty. But early on, it's not that difficult over the first 6 weeks. They're, you know, at the Jets, Seahawks, at Patriots, Vikings, which is in Dublin, and then a bye, and then against the Browns. And they're either a favorite or a slight underdog in all those except the Browns. They're a 6.5-point favorite. So they could get off to a very good start. Obviously, there'll be a lot of hype coming with that. It's kind of a question of what does that look like towards the end of the season.
I was actually surprised this one is so popular because I've said this about the Steelers for the past few weeks, really, that I think we're going to get to week 18 and they're going to be 8-8. And it's just like, okay, flip a coin on whether they go over this or not, because I just think they're kind of middle of the road. I don't think they're that exciting. I don't think they're that bad. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to fall off a cliff, but I don't think he's going to be very great, good either. I'm just kind of in the middle of the road with the Steelers. But like you said, Ben, like they're a very, very public team. B, they're all this to Tomlin never had a losing season. People aren't going to fade that or don't want to, you know, do want to fade it this year because of Aaron Rodgers, and he's so polarized. So I get it. I get why people are betting this, but just from a, I'm just trying to figure out whether they go over or under. I'll throw up my hands. I have no idea. No idea if I'd go over or under on this one.
Yeah, I look, I'm all on. You know me, Frank. I've been loud about this. I'm big on the under in this one. But here's the thing.
I think
the Steelers are going to be the most over-talked about team in the first 6 weeks because they're going to start hot with just an easy schedule, and everybody's going to say, look at this. They're Super Bowl bound. And then all of a sudden, we're going to realize they weren't as good as we thought they were early. They're not going to be as bad as we say they are late, but they are going to free fall late in the season because they're not as good as these teams that they're playing. So, like, to me, the most predictable thing is the overreaction on the front end and the back end, and we end up with the first losing season in Tomlin's career. That's my hot. I'm just dug into this one, but I can't walk it back anymore. I've said it too much. I'm dug in. This is the first losing season for Mike Tomlin. There we go. Give me another one. Let me ask you this. Make this make sense. Why bet $250,000 on the Bills to win the AFC East at -250? Like, that's a lot of money for not a lot of return, and there's a lot of risk to that. I realize that people are playing with funny money at this point, but $250,000 bet on the Bills to win the AFC East at -250 just sounds like bad money management to me.
Yeah, I mean, so this was the largest divisional bet that I've reported at any sports book, you know, in the U.S., $250,000, as you said, on the Bills to win the AFC East. Ultimately, it's really a question of, does Josh Allen get injured, I think, is what you're essentially betting on, right? We just said that he's the most valuable quarterback above replacement with Mitchell Trubisky. Obviously, if he gets injured, that means they have the highest, the lowest floor or the most to fall if things don't go well. And they're the only team favored in every game this season. And when you really look at it, it's impressive as well. They're favored by at least 8.5 points in four of their first five games. And they play three home games in a row, from weeks 3 to 5. And in 11 of those games, they're at least 5.5 point favorites. So they're not just a team, right, where we talk about some of the teams, the Patriots, they're favored in 9, 10, 11 games, a lot of those being 1.5, 2.5, right, a low under a field goal or just above a field goal. The Bills are massive favorites in a lot of these games, and it really just comes down to, hey, do you think that over the course of 4 months, that's a better return on your investment than putting in the stock market or some options trading or something else? There's also always ways, right, to hedge out against of it, to have another bet on another team to win the division. There's ways that you can mitigate a potential loss if it looks like things are going to go badly. But really, I think it's just a Josh Allen injury and kind of what they're looking for. And under Sean McDermott, I believe the Bills have gone over their win total in 7 of 8 years. And a lot of those have been double digit win totals. So they tend to outperform expectations. They're one of four teams that has the highest win total at 11.5. And so people, that better is really, I think, looking at it and saying, hey, no one else is close in this division. As long as Josh Allen stays upright for 17 games, they should coast this AFC East crown.
Yeah, they're the of the 32 NFL teams, the biggest favorite to win their division, higher than the Eagles in the NFC East or the Chiefs in the AFC West, because it is hard to tell yourself a story where the Bills don't win this division. But the reason, and I usually like unders and odd props and win totals and I guess the negative side of things, because I always say to myself, more could go wrong than it can go right. And Josh Allen goes down and all of a sudden you're holding a $250,000 ticket and you're probably just throwing it in the trash, because I don't think Mitchell Trubisky is beating out anybody in the AFCs. Maybe the injury happens late. If it does at all, Josh Allen has been kind of an Iron Man, so we don't expect that. But I couldn't. It makes me anxious just sitting here talking about it, because you just think of, you're in week one and the Tom Brady 2008 thing happens where he goes down in the first quarter of the season. And what then? I more could go wrong than it can go right. Let's just put it that way.
Well, especially for the Saints, we got what, under 5.5 on the Saints. Are we just presuming everything's going to go wrong for New Orleans this year?
Yeah,
this is not.
They're terrible. Like, there's been some years that Ben knows this where you see 4.5. I think we've even seen a 3.5, maybe when the Browns were really, really bad. I never go under those because it's like, whatever. Like, you don't need to do much to get over these win totals. I don't bet the real high ones either to go over. Like, I think that's crazy. But I sit here and I say, I don't know how to get the Saints to 6 wins. I look at that roster. They just lost Tyrann Mathieu to retirement. Their quarterback situation's a mess. I don't know how to get them the 6 wins. I'm not going to take the under because I just don't play that way. But they're a worst team of football, probably. If you can find that prop, go for that. Who finishes with the worst record, a.k.a. the first pick of the draft. And the Saints, you can bet that way, I guess. I don't know, though. I don't know. I just, going under a win total that low just is a hard way to live, because usually teams are going to luck into a few wins. This isn't college, you know, right? Like, there's no Citadel versus Alabama. Every football team in the NFL is pretty good, but the Saints, yeah, it's going to be a rough season there.
Yeah, this was an interesting one as well. I talked to one odds maker. They opened 6.5, right? And that was before, obviously, Derek Carr and the injury. One book actually took some over money on the Saints, again, with Derek Carr.
Oh, no.
Early over money. And then it's basically been a flood, right, of under money since then. Most books moved down to 5.5, both off of Carr's retirement and just the betting. One odds maker said it's been nothing but under money. At BetMGM, 91% of the money is on the under, as you would expect. And this is the second most bet under as well. So, obviously, the public not in love with the Saints, understandably. They're only favored in one game, which is in week 16 against the Jets. Obviously, who knows what either of those teams looks like. Again, like we talked about with the Bills being a big favorite, they're an underdog of more than a field goal in 12 of those games, including they are playing the Bills. They're 12.5-point underdogs right now against the Bills later in the season. The one pause you could have is, like Frank had said, you know, teams do sometimes luck into wins. According to Warren Sharp, they do have the third easiest schedule by opposing NFL season win totals.
Wow.
So not
okay.
the most difficult schedule. They have some offensive talent. But in that quarterback article, Tyler Shough was the I had to project a quarterback, right? One of them, because you have to compare one against the other. I had Tyler Shough as the starter. He was only worth 0.69 points over Spencer Rattler. So that was 32nd in the NFL.
Oh, boy.
That's not good that's if bad. He's worth that little over Spencer Rattler, right? That's just a problem. So they have, I wouldn't even say arguably, the worst quarterback situation in the league, regardless of what you think of their roster. Are they ever going to be better at quarterback facing any team this season? Are they going to be favored even in that game against the Jets in week 16? Doesn't mean they can't win some games, but going 6-11 still seems like a high bar to clear.
I have not, I can't lie to you, I have not looked that far ahead in the schedule, Ben, and you're telling me the Saints are favored over the Jets. Can we pause the podcast? Because I got something to do real quick. I got to go.
Yeah. Okay.
What are people talking about? The Jets aren't even going to be that bad. What? Yeah. Okay. All right. We've got one good, useful nugget of information out of this podcast, at least, because yes, I will. Yes, I will. Trust me.
Y'all can just clip this off in a year. Because it's going to be really sad for Saints fans when they just get bludgeoned all year. They have the first pick in the draft, but unfortunately, Arch didn't develop quite as quickly as everybody wants him to, and he's back for his last year at Texas, and they're stuck with the first pick in the draft in a year that has plenty of quarterbacks that will probably be out, and they'll have to decide, are they going to actually draft a quarterback, or are they going to try and find a way to get Arch the following year, and that's going to agonize the entire fan base, because that's the way football works. The football gods will never have it. The football gods will never have me have nice things. But Ben, in case you haven't noticed, over my right shoulder is a particular helmet. And I just want to, you know, I want you to think about that particular helmet that's over my right shoulder when I ask you about the fact that two people have placed fairly large bets on my beloved Raiders to win the Super Bowl at some pretty staggering odds. So should I go out there and start celebrating now or later?
I mean, that depends how you like to celebrate, I guess. You could celebrate both now and later. I don't know if you're going to be celebrating a Raiders Super Bowl victory. They need to make the playoffs first, and then they can proceed slowly towards the Super Bowl.
Is that how that works? I haven't seen enough playoffs to know how that actually works.
Fitz wouldn't even know. He wouldn't know. Yeah, we need to slow it down for him
allegedly,
a little bit here.
Allegedly, that's how it works.
Allegedly.
The Raiders every year are fascinating. Almost no matter what number, right, they're going to have some liability, obviously, at a lot of Nevada books where Las Vegas is, and now they have a team. So a lot of people, whether they're coming into Vegas, whether they live in Vegas, are going to take some shots on the Raiders. These two bets are not those shots. One was $25,000 on the Raiders at 100-1, and another was $10,000 also on the Raiders to win the Super Bowl at 100-1. Both of those at DraftKings. And I did ask them different bettors, so not the same bettor betting on those. So two different people believing in the Raiders.
So it was Jason Fitz and who? That's what we need to ask.
Exactly. Like, that's... I believed the other one was you. I thought Frank was like, you know what? If you're putting 25 down, I'll put 10 down.
Okay. And look, a lot of this too, right? So obviously that first bet wins $2.5 million. Some of what you're doing with this potentially is setting up, right, whether you're betting on other teams, potentially cashing. There's a lot of ways to go if, let's say, the Raiders start out hot or those odds decrease and that ticket is worth more than kind of initially what you put in. So a lot of these bigger bets like that or longer shots, people aren't necessarily expecting them to win, as weird as that sounds. It's kind of about playing a position and having an advantage a little later in the season and betting something else in order to eventually come out with more money than you had going in, which is always a good thing with gambling.
All I heard out of that was that two of the smartest people in gambling have obviously decided that the Raiders are going to win the Super Bowl. That's the real takeaway from that entire point. All right, there is actually value on betting in preseason games. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll tell you about it. Plus, we'll get some rapid-fire best bets, all that coming up next. We're back and excited for preseason betting. I know everybody says you must be a degenerate, but Ben, this is the annual time where I think smart people let everybody know that there can be value, right? Like, what's sort of the right approach to preseason football?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things here, right? One is, much like when there's NBA games on or baseball or, you know, all of whatever, 125 college football games on a Saturday, you don't actually have to bet it, right? And so if you don't want to bet on NFL preseason, that's totally fine. A lot of what it's going to be is finding information and really doing a lot of digging, following on social media, following beat reporters, sound bites, all of that, because it's essentially a game of information. You know, how long are quarterbacks starting? What does the quarterback depth chart look for a certain team, right? And so whereas before we're measuring the starting quarterbacks, obviously how much the line moves when they're playing, you're almost measuring a portion of that where, hey, the Bengals, for example, right? Joe Burrow says he's going to play. That line has moved a ton in week one of preseason because he's going to play at least a little bit, whereas previously he wasn't playing. But you're looking at who are the backup quarterbacks, the third string quarterbacks, and then kind of what do coaches typically do during the preseason. In the NFL, the motivation is pretty much the same. You know, you could argue late in the season, maybe it changes if some teams are trying not to win necessarily, but everyone's trying to win. In the preseason, that isn't necessarily the case. You may just want to say, hey, we want a good look at this second string quarterback. He's going to be out there for three quarters. Or hey, we really want to make sure we get this running game going. So we're going to run 35 times, right? Some coaches just don't want anyone to get injured. So they just want the game over with. There are differing motivations, which isn't something that happens in the regular season. So there's a lot of variables to work with. It's kind of its own league, its own stew. It's very different than the regular season, but there is value to be had kind of if you know where to look. But I would just say kind of there's also no shame in just saying, hey, the NFL season starts in 4 or 5 weeks. I'm happy to look at week one and get some bets down for that too.
Yeah, I'm of the, I'll just wait it out. There are some situations, like you said, if you suss out the information, which is readily available. I mean, coaches mostly will tell you their playing time plans. I'm not going to play these guys. I'm going to play these guys three series. There's history with guys too. Andy Reid has always been an old school guy and will play as starters in a preseason. Sean McVay kind of brought in this new model and he lives by it every year. He won't even play a second string quarterback. I think there's a stat out there that Sean McVay has never played his second string quarterback a snap in the preseason. Like it's insane. So we know that But still, it needs to be a very specific situation for me where I kind of have a comfort with the third string quarterback. Oh, this guy's a little bit better than people think. Or, you know, the Browns are a good example of a team this year. They're going to be playing their quarterbacks seriously for four quarters because they have to evaluate these guys, like all four of these guys. So maybe the Browns are the type of team that's going to be terrible in regular season, but maybe there's some value on them in the preseason. I haven't looked into that closely, but there just has to be a specific situation where I feel comfortable. This team's going to be playing a little harder than this team for the full game and the backups and blah, 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 because it's you really have to study it. There is value for those who want to study this. Go for it, because there can be value there. I just don't like digging that deep into it.
Yeah, one of the biggest changes I made in my betting life a couple of years ago, and this was a staggering one. It's not for everybody, but I'm just being honest with the world. I stopped placing any bets on the NFL in the first 2 weeks of the regular season because it's so wild because of the lack of preseason. I feel like the first couple of weeks, everybody's getting their feet under them and teams look wildly different. Frank and I do in our Sunday night show for years. Last year, we talked about it. After week one, we're like, we're not going to overreact. And after 2 weeks, it was like, well, we're not going to overreact to the overreaction from the reaction. How do you do that? And I just feel like because the preseason has become such a wild west of who actually plays, for me, I'm so uncomfortable with the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season really knowing what a team looks like. I'd rather wait a little bit and then bet more confidently as the season goes on. So, I agree totally, guys. There is value in preseason betting, but there is also value to stepping back and saying, you know what? I know what I know. I know what I don't know. I'm going to do this responsibly, and I'm going to wait till I have the most informed opinion to be able to bet on every single week. That being said, informed means best bets. All right, so let's take a look at some of the best bets that are out there, Ben, that you like right now. Okay, so a week one bet that Ben likes right now today would be?
Yeah, so this is one. I know there's been some updated information as well, but there are some Texans +3s out there against the Rams. And I also like the under, which I believe is at 45.5. I know there's been updates on Stafford, but 37-year-old, I believe, quarterback, bad back, not going to play like in the preseason. That doesn't sound great to me. Rams defense, very good. Texans defense, very good. I just think that's going to be more of a slugfest. So I like the under there. And then there are some +3s still available for the Texans. So that's where I'm looking. Some 2.5s as well. So make sure you get that +3.
And as just said, the Rams start slow. The Rams can start slow during a season because McVay does not play anybody in the preseason. We've seen it before. We've seen them struggle week one. So I do like that. For week one, I think one of the teams I'm planting my flag on is the Jets. In doing my previews and really digging into them, studying them, I said, you know what? This team still has a lot of the same talented dudes that made me like them a lot last year. I think Justin Fields is not a great passer in the NFL, but he can be an effective quarterback. He's just different. He's different than everybody else, and he can make a defensive coordinator's life very hard. So they play the Steelers week one. I think the Jets kind of bamboozle them a little bit. I don't need the 3.5 points. I'll take Jets money line over the Steelers. I think Jets win that game straight up at home. And I think through the course of the season, the Jets with Aaron Glenn, who I really respect as a coach, I think the Jets are going to be a lot better than people think. I think their win total 6.5. Yeah, they'll go over that. I think the Jets are going to be one of the surprise teams in the NFL this year.
I just told you I would stay away from week one, but not when the Raiders are playing the Patriots, the most overvalued team in the entire NFL, and the Patriots are favored by 3? Hell no. I'm taking that all day long, boys. I am wildly confident week one, my beloved Raiders come all the way out to Boston, to Foxborough, Massachusetts, where they're going to come out and they're going to show the world that the Chip Kelly's offense was something that the Patriots weren't ready for, that Mike Vrabel's being overhyped for all that he's expected to do, and that there's still going to be growing pains in New England. I'd take the Raiders flat out, but you're giving me 3 points. I'm definitely taking that. Come on now, boys. What are we doing
that
here?
That line surprised me. Like, what we're saying, the Patriots are going to be this 8.5 win team. The Raiders aren't that highly thought of. The same growing pains the Patriots are going to have, the Raiders are going to have. They got a new coaching staff. They got a new quarterback. They got a new running back. They're going to be building offense around. I was stunned by that line. I'm surprised. I thought, honestly, it was going to be more like 5.5, 6.
But 5.5, sorry, 6 that the Patriots are favored by?
Yeah,
Frank.
I think the game's not in Vegas. It's in New England. What? Like,
yeah, but
I don't view the Patriots and Raiders on the same plane. Like, I'm sorry. I do apologize. And I know you're going to, like, you know, block my number from now on. But
I'm
going to
tell you flat out, Patriots, like, I am the most.
The Patriots are flat. They're better than the Raiders.
I am the most realistic Raiders fan you've ever met. You know that. Like, most years, I sit there and say 6 or 7 wins. I think the Raiders are flat out. If I had to take a win total prediction right now between the Raiders and the Patriots, I would absolutely take the Raiders. That's I am out on the Patriots being more than a 6-win team this year. Like, Josh McDaniels has an offense that is so complicated that one player that actually played it in that offense, that played over 10 years in the league, told me it was like a foreign language I couldn't understand. And we think that Drake May is just going to come in week one and be like, oh, now suddenly I speak this foreign language and it's perfectly fine. Like, nope, not buying any of that. Like, there's going to be a transition period. The Patriots are going to have to suffer through it. They're going to be better, but they're not going to be that good. They're not going to be that good. All right, favorite over. Ben's just watching mommy and daddy fight. And he's getting really uncomfortable. Ben!
No. This is good over. Stuff.
Come on now.
There's another one we touched on a little bit before. I think sometimes it's difficult to go over high win totals, right, and go under low win totals. I'm going to do both. For my over, it's the Niners, 10.5. I thought this was a great stat that Warren Sharp had in his preview. Last year, the 49ers had the worst rest disadvantage, minus 21 days, in the last 25 years that he studied. And still, they were 13th in DVOA, the FTN fantasy stat, and number 3 in net yards per play. So kind of a better team than their record showed. Obviously, a lot of injuries. We talked about they have the easiest schedule in the NFL by opposing season win totals. And this year, they have the 4th best net rest edge at plus 9 days. That's difficult to say once, let alone 3 times fast. But basically, terrible schedule, a lot of injuries last season. This season, very easy schedule. And I just think there's too many things going for them. They get to play the NFC South. They get to play the AFC South. They got a game against the Giants, against the Browns. It seems difficult that they're not going to get to double-digit wins. And then again, they just need to get to 11 to cash this.
Yeah, I love that you referenced the net rest, because for people who haven't known, you know about this, it's pretty simple. One team coming off a bye week has extra rest than the team not coming off a bye week. A team that has to play on Monday night has less rest than a team on Sunday night. The teams would have more rest, have more of an edge, and they have better against the spread records. Like, this is something that's been proven year after year. It's a great stat. It's great to look into. It's very advanced. I got Fitz mad at the first part of this. I'm going to make Ben happy, because my favorite over is the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know why we have them at 8.5. Why do we have them at 8.5? They won 14 games last year. We're saying that the difference between Sam Darnold and JJ McCarthy is 6 games? Like, what? Like, what are we doing here? There's a possibility JJ McCarthy is better than Sam Darnold, who had never posted a passer rating above 80 in his career before he got into the warm cocoon of Kevin Stefanski and the Vikings, that great coaching staff. I thought the Vikings had a great offseason. I get it. The schedule is very tough. But you're telling me this team's going to be 8-9? Nope, I'm not buying that. All I need to go is 9-8 to cash this. Please, all day. The Vikings are easily my favorite over on the board.
Ben, thoughts? Because I agree with Frank, I have so many thoughts,
but it's a quick hitter. I think, yes, the schedule is difficult. And ultimately, one of the biggest storylines right in the NFL, I think Travis Hunter is fascinating, playing both ways. Can he do it? Shedeur Sanders, the Browns, all that thing. Is JJ McCarthy? It's such an unknown. I think no one would argue that the Vikings have a top 5, very easily top 10 roster in terms of talent. They have the largest question mark at the most important position, and that's JJ McCarthy. And, you know, you have to trust the people in the building who decided to let Sam Darnold walk, and they obviously believed in JJ McCarthy. But I wouldn't say 100% of people thought he was an amazing quarterback coming out of Michigan, and kind of some of the almost the same narrative that we were talking about at Michigan, right? Can he drive the car? All this offensive talent, great defense, is the same thing with the Vikings. Basically, just don't crash the car, right? You're being handed a Porsche. Just go the speed limit, maybe a little bit over, get where you need to go. You should go in the playoffs. But yes, tougher division. And then also you have, you know, potential suspension for Addison. Justin Jefferson already has a hamstring. There are some little things there, TJ Hawkinson. But like I said, it was supposed to be a quick hitter. This is why I can't get me started on the Vikings.
No, you can go off on that because the Vikings were going to be my pick too. Frank and I align on this. I think the Vikings really? Are the easiest, wow, okay. The easiest one to go out there and hammer the over on. I'm all in. I'm not in on JJ being a world beater. I think he's going to be
his 10th pick of the draft. He might be though. He might be.
Yeah, he might be. He might be. And I might.
Why can't he be Bo Nix? He was drafted ahead of Bo Nix.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, until we see anything on the field, we can't take back what we said the day he was drafted. The day he was drafted, I said, Mike could, maybe. Like, that's just sort of where I am on JJ. But that being said, I believe in the coaching staff enough that they'll be able to squeeze all the juice out of JJ that they possibly can. All right. Favorite under, Ben? Let's be, you know, Nancy negative now.
Yeah, we touched on a little bit too. It's the Saints under 5.5. I think there's a couple other ones that you could go to as well. But the Saints and the Dolphins is one. They're actually down from 8.5 down to 7.5. So some of the value gone there. The Saints, it's just really, it's pretty simple. It's just the quarterback, right? And if you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, it's very difficult to win. They do have skill position players, right? Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, though, you worry about the concussion history. And the offensive line, you know, we'll see. It's a good, there are pieces on the team, but without that quarterback situation, you know, it's just in such flux, right? And so you have the worst quarterback situation in the NFL, like we said before, Tyler Shaw, not really even worth anything above replacement over Spencer Rattler. And then you have Jake Haener, who's the third stringer. There's just not that much there, I think, to get excited about. They're underdogs in so many games. It just seems to me like something that could go south. And again, the Saints at some point have to pay the Piper, salary cap, bad drafts, all of those things. They did trade up for Marcus Davenport several years ago and gave up a first round pick. Like, those are things eventually that come back to bite you. I think this is the year where, again, like Frank said, whether you're betting them to be the team with the worst record or just betting under 5.5, I just don't see how they're getting the 6 wins.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. This one hurts me, and Fitz will back me up. This time last year, I was telling people, the Commanders could be a playoff team. They were my team. I stood on a table for them. I said, the Commanders are going to be better than everybody thinks. They're going to be the breakout team. Jaden Daniels, Dan Quinn, all this stuff. So I'm doing the WWE thing, the John Cena heel turn right now, and saying easily the Commanders are my favorite underpick, 9.5. Every regression metric you can have, the Commanders fit it. Everything. Like, and just think about how their season went. Hail Mary wins, overtime wins, beating the Eagles with 7 seconds left. Every way you could win again. Great season for the Commanders. I loved it. Washington fans deserve that. They deserved a winner after all the Daniel Snyder stuff. It was fun. It was awesome. And there's no chance they repeat that at all. Like, maybe Jaden Daniels is just so good that I'm sitting there with that under ticket saying, what did I do? I bet against Superman. Like, this is dumb. I get that, but I'm going to go with all the regression stats and say the Commanders take a step back this year. They'll be fine in the future. And then, of course, the Terry McLaurin stuff isn't that great either, right? Like, maybe Terry McLaurin's not on the field week one or two, or maybe he's traded. I don't think so, but that adds to this, where I'm out on the Commanders. I think they go under 9.5.
Look, you guys have taken too easy a path. Like, I'm going to give myself no squeeze room at all and go with the team that stinks. It's going to stink again. Tennessee Titans at 5.5. I'm taking the under. In fact, if you had to ask me to place
Cam,
a bet
huh?
on the
not worried about no, Cam, no, the, I like
first coach out, Callahan's first coach out in October when Vrabel goes down to Tennessee and whoops the snot out of the Titans. Amy Adams Strunk will freak out. She'll fire Callahan. As a result, the interim coach will step in, whoever that's going to be, which will only stunt the development of Cam Ward. And we'll have to find out next year if the Titans can give him a coaching staff that doesn't ruin the poor kid's career. Like, I want Cam Ward to be successful. I don't trust the Titans to do that. Unfortunately, they just don't have a lot around him. And I just don't get a sense. Even the people I know that are down there in Nashville covering this team and are seeing it every day in practice do not give me any sort of massive confidence that the Titans have figured out how to do what they need to do around Cam Ward. You got a rookie quarterback saying that they're mediocre in their press conferences afterwards. Like, it just speaks to how bad things are in Tennessee. I think it absolutely falls apart. And while this team will be better in long term because of Cam Ward, they won't short term. So the Titans, I'll take the under, even though the under is staggeringly low. We all agree that the Bills seem to be the easiest divisional bet? Like, can we all just, are we nodding through that? We all believe Buffalo's
the best. Can I give one? Because I got a 4-1 that I really like. Jacksonville Jaguars. They were 4-1 at one point this offseason. Wink, wink. I did know that. I don't know what they are now, but I think Jaguars win that division. You're getting pretty good odds on them.
I'd say Chiefs, too. Yeah. I mean, they have won the AFC West 9 straight seasons. They're about, I don't know, minus 120 or so. The division is better, but minus 120 is not a lot for the Chiefs to win the division.
Not that much
to
lay, yeah.
Look, Frank and I need, do we have a steak dinner at the Super Bowl on this Jags thing? We need to. Like
but I needed to get 4 steak dinners out of it. That's why. Like, I mean, if I'm not going to take even odds on something I get 4-1 on.
Look, no, I'm just, Frank and I are on total and different ends of the spectrum on the Jags. I'm starting to wonder if I think anybody's going to be good, because all I'm doing here is saying everybody's going to suck this year. Okay, what about Ben? Is there a Super Bowl pick out there you like?
Yeah, so I was going to ask, is this our pick for the game or a bet that we like?
I mean, you're the guest. You're in our home. You can do it however you would like.
You're in our living room. Kick your feet up on the furniture.
So I think I'm taking the Bills over the Lions, which is not going out on a giant limb. And in terms of a bet that I think has value, it would be the Denver Broncos at 30-1. I just think this defense is really good. A lot of people starting to like the Broncos over 9.5. Another win total that stood out a little bit, right, when you saw it. Just because of, you know, I think there's still skepticism around Bo Nix, but that defense is so rock solid. They were first overall in EPA last year, number one against the pass, number four against the run. They obviously have Patrick Surtain. They get another corner in the first round. I believe they returned 20 starters. Sean Payton, whatever you want to argue, top 5 coach, top 10 coach, very good coaching staff. And they're favored in 12 games this season. I think the biggest thing as well, they've always played the Chiefs tough. And whether or not you want to say the Chiefs have more talent, obviously Mahomes over Nix there, those rosters aren't that far apart. I think the Broncos have a ton of talent. They obviously have one of the biggest home field advantages in the entire NFL as well. So that's one that stood out a little bit as still at 30-1, having some value. The difficulty, obviously, you got to get through the AFC, which is never easy.
By the way, Sean Payton told C-Rob this week, I don't know if you saw this, but Sean Payton told C-Rob that he believes his team can win the Super Bowl. I think he said it's only the 6th or 7th time in his career he's come into a season with the team he thinks can win a Super Bowl. So big words from Sean Payton. So go ahead, Frank.
I'm going to do the same thing as Ben. I'll give you my pick. I think the Ravens win the Super Bowl. Still getting okay odds on that, but a lot of metrics thought they were the best team of football last year. Didn't, obviously. Haven't done it in a postseason yet. I can't wait until they do to get rid of all the dumb Lamar Jackson negativity out there. The few people left, the haters out there. But my best bet to win the Super Bowl is the Buccaneers. They're about 35-1. I just think the Buccaneers could be awesome this year. I do. I think they level up. They become a Super Bowl contender. I like the odds on them. So Ravens, so I might even go Ravens over Buccaneers when I pick it officially for Yahoo in a few weeks, because I'm just that high in the Buccaneers taking a step this year.
I like that one. I was just going to jump in. I was surprised with the Bucs. Talking to odds makers, they were one of the least bet teams at BetMGM. Like, no one is betting on the Bucs. I understand, like, they're not necessarily the biggest fan base. Yeah, they're down in Florida. It's nice weather. There's plenty going on. All they keep doing is winning the division and playing well in the playoffs. It's not like they're going in the playoffs. You know, the Broncos last year got housed by the Bills. So it's kind of like, all right, there's still a gap here, even though we made the playoffs. You know, the Bucs have been right there with some of these teams. And so I think they're going to be really good. The Tristan Wirfs injury early, obviously, is something, you know, you worry about, but that should be only early in the season. That was my other potential one, certainly for the NFC. And the NFC is a little easier path as well.
Yeah, you guys, it's cute that you guys have both put together a Super Bowl that doesn't include the Chiefs. I'm just not willing to do that. So it's going to be the Chiefs in the Super Bowl beating somebody from the NFC. So let's just say they beat the Lions, even though the Lions have a ton of change this year. I'm just manifesting that because I finally want to see Detroit make a Super Bowl. But look, I'm not betting against the Chiefs. Like, it's cute that you guys have found other solutions that don't put the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But until Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson find a way to actually beat Kansas City, I just can't bank on it. I want to bank on it. I want you guys to be right. I think it's more interesting if we get one of those stories, but the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl just because that's the easiest bet in the world. MVP, Ben, you got an MVP for us this year?
Yeah, look, going up, you don't always want to have too many bets correlated with each other, right? It's kind of like the Super Bowl. You don't want all your props to be overs for one team, because then if it goes poorly, see Kansas City against Tampa Bay a couple years ago, then it's not a good day for you. But I like Brock Purdy, 28-1 for the 49ers. Again, with the injury, I think Ayuk coming back. This is just a bet also on Kyle Shanahan as a great offensive play caller. And again, the same thing with that easier schedule. I think they're just going to be winning a lot of games. It's essentially a quarterback award, so you're picking which quarterback you think has the best chance. I think if they're winning that division, they have a chance at the number one seed in the NFC. Brock Purdy is going to be getting the majority of the credit unless Christian McCaffrey has an unbelievable season, but you really can't rely on him for 17 games at this point anyway. So I think Brock Purdy is driving the bus, and I think he's good value at 28-1.
I completely agree. I have three different long shots. Because why would we take chalk? I'm not taking Josh Allen to win MVP. What fun is that? I want some long shots, and we could follow the narratives. It's going to be a quarterback. It's going to be a playoff team. It's probably going to be a one seed, maybe a two seed, although that was broken last year. So I have got three. One of them was Purdy. I think that's a great call. All the narratives line up for him as far as winning games and all that kind of stuff. One of them is Caleb Williams, because if it hits, it's going to hit big. Like, I trust Ben Johnson. If they win that division, well, all of a sudden, Caleb Williams, at the odds you can get him at for MVP, look pretty good, because he's going to put up a lot of numbers in that offense. And then the third one's Baker Mayfield. Like, I kind of got to go all in on this Bucks thing, right? And he's getting good odds to win MVP, too. If they backdoor themselves into the number one seed in the NFC, Baker Mayfield's going to get a lot of MVP love.
Look, those are all really smart calls, and you're right to not always go chalk.
And you're going
to
pick Mahomes, aren't you? You're just picking Mahomes.
No, I'm not
going
to pick Mahomes.
Like, that's what
I'm not going to pick Mahomes. But I'm going to say tie goes to the batter, right? Like, last year, there was basically a tie in the MVP conversation for most people, and Josh Allen won it. I don't think the Bills or the Ravens or the Chiefs, any of those teams, are set for a regression, which means we're going to run back this year exactly what we saw last year at the top of the AFC. And if we're in that situation, I think what's going to be on the conscience of the voters is that last year Lamar didn't get it so that Josh could, which means this year, if it's the same exact situation, if we have the same exact play, then you got to tell me that Lamar's going to win it. I do think the one challenge to all of that is that if the Bengals can even put up a Pop Warner third grade level defense to find themselves into the playoffs, the people that last year felt like they couldn't vote for Joe to be the MVP will flock to Joe Burrow this year to give it to him. But I think when we start talking about who's going to win the MVP, it's not about what happens on the field. It's about what's in the minds of the voters. So knowing that Josh Allen got it over Lamar last year, tie would go to Lamar this year. Knowing that they couldn't vote for Joe Burrow means that if the Bengals are even remotely good, that would be my longer shot, if you want to call that. Neither of those are long shots. But fact is, the votes are going to go the way the votes go. I lean Lamar, maybe Joe Burrow. That's my logic on it. What I know is you can follow all of us on social media. Be sure. Ben's done some great, right? And look, I'm telling you, if you're brand new to trying to figure out how to bet, just read some of his stuff, because it's really good on the Yahoo site, and it will tell you kind of some of the information you need to know. And then also, if you have questions, like I think some forget about that, reach out to all of us on social media, because the fact is, whether you're dabbling or whether you are a degenerate, either way, it's a whole community out there of people having fun doing it. So hang out with us every single week. Hang out with us all the time on social media. Follow Ben. It's at Ben Fox, FAWKES 22 on Twitter. You know, at Jason Fitz, at Yahoo Schwab. Ben, did you have fun? Did you have fun hanging out with me and Frank?
This was great, guys. I was going to say, too, week one, you got Ravens Bills. So you'll have a pretty good sense of if Lamar can
get
some MVP votes that night.
Well, I mean, if you really want to see the MVP, just watch Ashton Jeanty. I'm telling you, my bias is just fully swinging in. Rate, review, subscribe.
You are
Homer. I'm going full Homer. Yeah, lucky I didn't put the helmet on. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends, family, and enemies. Tell everybody to hang out with us. Thank you so much for listening to Inside Coverage. We'll be back on Thursday with a new episode.